Well, it took 365 days to get here, but we're finally in 2020, and it's, of course, the big movie season around the holidays, and you went to one of those blockbusters, Matt.
Yeah, so all the movies we're going to be talking about in the next few weeks, Doug, were released in 2019, of course, but this is now, we're into awards season. Nominations are coming soon. So let's start with Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. I saw this about 10 days ago. I have been on vacation, so wanted to come in and talk about this. This is episode 9, if people are keeping track.
I don't know that I am, but that's a lot of movies.
J.J. Abrams is back as director. He directed episode 7, The Force Awakens. Rian Johnson took over with episode 8, The Last Jedi, which was much derided by Star Wars fan types who did not like the character arc of Luke Skywalker played by Mark Hamill. Full disclosure, I was 12 when the original Star Wars came out. I should have been exactly the right demographic to be obsessed with Star Wars, but I never got obsessed with it. I had already seen American Graffiti, Taxi Driver with my dad.
Wow.
You know, and I was more into that. And it's not that I didn't like Star Wars, just the incredible snowball effect of the fan base never ceases to amaze me through the years. I mean, people obsess over the smallest details of what characters do and this and that. And so I'll just try to review this film as best I can as not a Star Wars geek, nerd, whatever people want to call it out there. I actually didn't mind this film as much as some of the critics have come after it. It's short. It's only like 2 hours and 15 minutes. I thought it was going to be way longer. The big thing in this is Emperor Palpatine is back, and he is determined to switch Kylo Ren and Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, to the dark side. That is his great goal. What happens? I can't reveal spoilers. I know a lot of people still haven't seen it. Basically, that's the plot. Billy Dee Williams comes back as Lando Calrissian. He is still Mr. Cool when he comes on screen. The audience cheered when he came on screen. I actually am satisfied with the concluding character arc of Kylo Ren, played by Adam Driver, and Rey, played by Daisy Ridley. And they have a strong connection in this film, which you'll have to watch to see what happens between the two of them. They're almost like brother-sister, but they're almost like they could be lovers as well.
All right. Well, when I went to imdb.com, as I usually do, just get a little, you know, information about the films we'll talk about, the first star mentioned is dead, Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, she's in this a lot. They must have shot a lot of scenes with her before she passed. I mean, she's been dead 3 years now, 3 years ago Christmas. And they still have footage of her, you know, talking to people and things like that. So it can be a little jarring to see that now, but I know they want to exhaust all they can with Carrie Fisher. The first part of the film started slow for me. They're jumping around between planets. There's a lot of chasing about what's going to happen. They have to go after Emperor Palpatine and destroy him. And is Kylo Ren bad? Is he good? A little bit of a slow start. Then things do pick up. I felt they picked up about midway through. I think J.J. Abrams is a good director. I think his goal here, Doug, was to try to correct some of the things that the Star Wars fan base thought Rian Johnson got wrong in The Last Jedi. We have not enough time to go through every single detail of Luke Skywalker's character arc and him flying around and things like that. It's all of a sudden, I didn't know people could fly with the Force, but that was another thing that people were very upset with Last Jedi, with, you know, Carrie Fisher flying around and Mark Hamill flying around like they're superheroes or something. But I do feel there was a chance or a kind of a effort by Abrams to satisfy the fan base with this film. And I think for the most part, they are satisfied. The critics don't seem to like this film quite as much, but I actually thought there were some exciting scenes in it. What really has driven this trilogy is the on-target casting of Adam Driver as Kylo Ren and Daisy Ridley as Rey. They are strong actors. They are very good in these parts. And let's not forget, before people get too wound up in what didn't happen in Last Jedi and this film, the George Lucas prequels were bad films. The Phantom Menace is a bad film. So is Attack of the Clones. These Disney films, once Lucas gave it over to Disney, are better. They are better films than that. And I think people have a short memory that this is an improvement, at least in my mind, on Phantom Menace and Jar Jar Binks and some of the horrible casting decisions Lucas made back with Phantom Menace.
I think of these as like space westerns.
Yes.
And they've now been around for decades. When was the first Star Wars?
1977.
Yeah. I mean, that's 43 years ago. Mm-hmm. Oh, 33 years ago. Let me get my math
right. No, 43.
Oh,
you're right.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. At any rate, it's formulaic to me.
It's not quite my thing. As I said at the top, I should have been the right age to go bonkers over Star Wars. I have friends that are bonkers over Star Wars, like Greg Carlson, who joins us here sometimes. And that's fine. It's made a lot of people happy. I'm certainly not here to criticize the fan base. But I did like the film well enough as a non-Star Wars person. And so I'll give it a very tentative review. I will say it is not made as much at the box office as the previous two films had. So there might have been some lingering effect of angry fanboy vitriol from The Last Jedi slipping over into this. I'm not sure. We'll never be able to measure things like that. But its opening weekend take was not as big as The Force Awakens.
Well, in years past, some of those opening weekends, it'd be people camped outside to get into the theater.
I didn't get the sense this one there wasn't as much excitement as there was for The Force Awakens, which was episode 7 a few years ago.
All right. Well, let's move on to another movie, very different, Little Women.
There's been lots of film adaptations of Louisa May Alcott's wonderful novel about four sisters growing up in Civil War New England. My favorite is the Winona Ryder 1994 version. The Katharine Hepburn version in 1933 is very good. I don't care for the June Allison, Elizabeth Taylor film from 49. Greta Gerwig is the writer-director here. Of course, she was Oscar-nominated for Lady Bird 2 years ago. She's again working with Saoirse Ronan, who starred as basically herself, Greta Gerwig's alter ego in Lady Bird. And now, of course, Saoirse Ronan takes over the key role of Jo March. She's the writer of the family. Florence Pugh plays Amy. She's the painter. We have Beth, the youngest, and of course, Meg is played by Emma Watson. Meg is the oldest of the girls. Laura Dern plays the mother. Meryl Streep plays the aunt. Timothy Chalamet is the neighbor boy, Laurie, that really loves Joe. We have, of course, you know, Joe meets this professor at this boarding house who's foreign. And if you remember the old version, you know, Gabriel Byrne played him. So what's going to happen if you haven't read the book, then go in and just enjoy it. What I will say is this is a wonderful version. Ronan is fantastic in the lead role. I think she'll get her fourth Oscar nomination. Greta Gerwig did slightly alter the ending, but it's not to the point where I think she ruined it. The ending altering, I think, is fine how she did it. So don't be worried that, you know, you want that big payoff. It's emotional. You know, there's still those scenes that just tug at your heartstrings. The father being away at the Civil War. You know, Beth, who's the sickly one. There's a lot of emotion. I will say the timeline is a little jarring. So what Gerwig does is she starts out with Joe trying to sell her stories and books. So now she is away from the family. She's older. She's teaching kids. She's living in a boarding house in New York City. And then we get flashbacks to 7 years previous when it's the Civil War and the girls are younger. This kind of back and forth goes on a lot during the film. And sometimes I did feel like it was a little hard to follow. Like I wasn't quite following when the flashbacks were coming. So that was a little jarring. It was very jarring for my 11-year-old daughter until she settled down and I told her these are flashbacks. So Gerwig plays with the timeline differently than the previous versions. She plays with the ending differently, but she is faithful to the girls, to the story. And I think this is a wonderful adaptation and I expect lots of Oscar nominations.
And how do they deal with the period?
You know, pretty much the same way. These are women who express themselves. I mean, Joe flat out says, I wish I'd have been born a boy.
Wow.
Because there are only so many opportunities in 1862 for a young woman who does not want to get married. And Joe does not want to get married like Meg does. And she, you know, has this argument with Meg where Meg is like, don't put your dreams on me. I want to get married. I want to have a family. But Joe's not like that. And, you know, Timothée Chalamet loves her. He pursues her. What will happen? We don't know. You'll have to go see it. But yeah, there's definitely still that. So there's a modern take on it too, because, you know, now so many more opportunities, thankfully, you know, thankfully change has come. Women can vote now. I mean, I can't believe that's only 100 years ago. That's just stunning to think about. But so Gerwig does put a modern spin on things. She gives Joe that voice of a strong, independent woman who nowadays would be, you know, perfectly, you know, able to go out and do exactly what she wants in the world. But in 1862, it was a different story. It was a different life. And she has to make that decision, that domestic pull. Will she get married? Will she be single? Will she be a spinster, which is the word used in the movie, of course, back then? Will she sell her story? So I really like this film a lot. The timeline's a little jarring. Takes about 10 minutes to get used to it. But again, Gerwig really has a gift as a writer and a director. And, of course, we only knew her as an actress in the starting films in the Noah Baumbach picture.
Well,
she
Louisa May Alcott also, of course, has a legacy as a writer because look at what she spawned. It's not just Little Women, Little Men, too.
Yes, yeah, so. It's great. And I invite people to go see this. I saw it at the Fargo Theater.
Okay, I've got a couple of Oscar trivia questions for you. That cast for Little Women is huge and impressive. You mentioned some of them. There are two Oscar winners in it.
Meryl Streep and...
Bum, 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 bum.
The music?
Nope. Chris Cooper.
Oh, Chris Cooper for adaptation. Yes, Chris Cooper plays Laurie's grandfather. Yes.
Okay.
I completely forgot about him. He's good in the movie, by the way.
So far, until, of course, the new Little Women, Little Women series of movies that you talked about, has only won one Oscar. And that was...
I think it was The Music in 1994. No?
Nope. It was... The best art direction, set decoration for the 1949 version.
Oh, okay.
That's trivia. We've been to the movies with Matt O'Lean.